Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. A ceasefire monitor is killed in Wau by unknown gunmen.
This act is extremely unwelcomed and it should be condemned in the strongest term as possible, and we appeal to the state authority at least to investigate and find a possible way to get those perpetrators and bring them to the book.
And rights groups are asking the Kenyan government to release two South Sudanese arrested by the police on Monday.
We have legitimate concerns that this deportation, first of all, would be unlawful, but that those two individuals may also be mistreated upon their return to South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An opposition liaison officer attached to the ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism known as CITISAM was found dead on Tuesday morning after he was reported missing since Sunday evening in Wau. A family member says Lieutenant Colonel El Fadil Mili Issa was kidnapped by unknown people while returning to the UNMISS compound in Wau. While state authorities say they are investigating Colonel Mili's death. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
31-year-old Colonel El Fadil Mail Issa was a member of the opposition who began working with the ceasefire monitoring body in October last year. Ramadan Mail Issa is his youngest brother. Ramadan says the family was shocked to hear the news of his murder and has created what he calls a gap in the family. He describes the last moments his late brother was seen by family members.
It was on Sunday evening. He left the UN compound. He went to visit the family in a POC, Wau. So on the way from POC to UN compound, he got kidnapped. From the very evening, Sunday evening, we have been looking for him, calling any close person to him to confirm whether he is with him, because he did not actually inform us that he's going somewhere or he's meeting someone, or he just informed the family that he's going back to UN compound.
Ramadan says the family had not heard from Mel in 2 days. Yesterday, his decapitated body was found in Loyola residential area southwest of Wau town. He says when the body was brought to the mortuary at Wau Teaching Hospital, they were able to identify his body. Ramadan says his late brother did not tell the family about dispute with work associates or others before he was killed.
So we don't know who kidnapped him. We don't know who killed him. He did not inform us whether he has a personal issue with someone or he has some conflict with anyone. We don't know anything about it.
Wau Town Mayor Mel Aleu Mel says his office has received a report about new criminal activities by people alleged dressed like women who carry out atrocities among civilians in the town. Speaking in Arabic, Mel says security officers are investigating Mel's killing and will bring any and all suspects to justice.
Those people at night dress in women's clothes and put women's hair so that when they knock at your door, seeing them, you think it is a woman, which later appears to be a different thing. So this is a new emergence for criminal activities.
The head of the local NGO, SEPO, condemned the incident and is calling for a quick investigation. SEPO Director Stephen Robo Musa says Mel's killing will create a mistrust among civilians and security organizations in the area.
This act is extremely unwelcomed, and it should be condemned in the strongest term as possible. And we appeal to the state authority at least to investigate and find a possible way to get those perpetrators and bring them to the book.
In a press release this morning in Juba, the CITISAM communication office confirmed the killing of one of its members in Wau. CITISAM sent their condolences to the family and promised to assist state authorities to investigate the incident. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
While in Nairobi, the arrest of two South Sudanese dissidents in Kenya has rights groups worried They will be deported and face possible detention and torture in Juba. VOA's Jill Craig has more from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kenyan police have detained two outspoken critics of South Sudan's government, according to their attorney and rights groups. South Sudanese lawyer Dong Samwell is a human rights advocate and member of the Human Rights and Justice Committee for South Sudan's opposition. Agrey Idri chairs the opposition's Humanitarian Affairs Committee. Samwell was last seen late Monday, Idri early Tuesday. Their attorney, Eddie Orinda, believes the men are being held at Nairobi police headquarters, but says he does not know much more than that.
No one is saying if they are being charged with anything. No one is giving any reason over a possible deportation order that we have heard about. And so we are in the dark.
Human Rights Watch South Sudan researcher Jonathan Pedno says the situation is concerning.
So we have legitimate concerns that this deportation, first of all, would be unlawful, but that those two individuals may also be mistreated upon their return to South Sudan.
Samwell is a registered refugee in Kenya, so HRW and Amnesty International argue that deporting him from Kenya would violate international law. Amnesty told VOA in written comments that given the serious risk of torture both would face in South Sudan, their deportation would also violate Kenya's obligations under the UN Convention Against Torture. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay denied knowledge of the detentions.
I've not heard about them being arrested. I know that they are in Nairobi.
Requests for a response from Kenyan police and the Interior Minister went unanswered. If Samwell and Idri are deported, it would not be the first time Kenya has sent back South Sudanese dissidents. In November, opposition spokesperson James Gaudet was returned to Juba, despite his refugee status. He has subsequently been held without charge at the National Security Service headquarters. Pedno says since an outbreak of violence in Juba in July, there has been an increase in crackdowns on dissidents.
I think it's quite clear that the South Sudanese authorities and the South Sudan government right now are trying to solidify and fortify their position by cracking down on the opposition and the independent media.
Orinda says he wants the Kenyan government to issue a statement specifying whether it had a role in the disappearance and possible deportation of these two individuals. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to sign an executive order today that would temporarily restrict access to the U.S. for people coming from Sudan, Somalia, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Iran, and Iraq, according to various news reports. Many Sudanese Americans oppose the move, as we hear from Ayen Bior in Washington.
A temporary ban on immigrants from countries including Sudan is one of several executive orders expected to be signed by President Trump this week. The order would ban the entry of thousands of migrants into the United States for several months, according to Reuters. The report says the order would not include a ban on religious minorities escaping persecution. Ridwan Dawood, a Sudanese-American citizen from the West Coast state of Oregon, says if the executive order is signed into law, it would affect the most vulnerable Sudanese citizens trying to seek refuge in America.
This decision is going to affect the lives of so many innocent people, especially the refugees who are fleeing a dictator, Islamic and radical government, and they have already been punished by not, thinking the same way. And now they're being punished again by Donald Trump. And it's just not fair. These people, especially the refugees from Sudan who live in the neighboring countries and are waiting to immigrate to new and safe places, including the U.S., they share the same values with American people.
Mohamed Badawi, a Sudanese citizen and lawyer at the Africa Center for Justice and Peace Studies in Uganda, says he is not convinced that banning Sudanese from traveling to the States will make America any safer. He says President Trump should think strategically of ways to ensure the safety and security of Americans as well as other people in the world.
So we have to think about the reactions. We have to think about the discriminations which is going to grow in other culture. We have to think about the reactions it may happen, because if these territories, they decided to access to any countries, We have seen that many scenarios it may happen. So strategic thinking, having opened the log, getting to the real reasons why this is happening.
Dawood, who received his American citizenship 6 years ago, says such a decision would affect him personally.
I have just started, my family and I, we did start a process to bring my 74-year-old dad in a legal way. And I'm expecting this decision is going to affect his process because I wanted to be reunited with my family. When I went back to Sudan 4 years ago, I was tortured. I was facing death penalty only because I was not in an agreement with our radical government in Sudan. So now my family and my little American daughter, she cannot even see her grandpa. She cannot even see her uncles and cousins because it is not safe for her to go to Sudan. And now my family, it seems like it's going to be really difficult for them to come to the U.S.
Dawood says he plans to protest the executive order if it goes into effect, and he will contact his representative in Congress to ensure that his concerns are heard. In a series of tweets from President Trump's official account, Mr. Trump said he plans to focus on national security today. Media reports also say the president will focus on measures to strengthen U.S. border security. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Yei River State authorities have relocated the Kajokeji Health Training Institute to Arua District in Uganda because of insecurity in the area. Teachers and students are afraid to return to South Sudan after unknown gunmen killed two students and looted property in September. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
Kajokeji Health Training Institute Director Lo Louis says South Sudan's Minister of Health closed the institute after gunmen attacked students who were preparing for final examinations. The attack caused panic among students and faculty. Louis says the new location in Arua Town, Uganda, is safe.
Our specialized tutors are mainly from Uganda, and due to the security situation, they fear coming there. And we also value their life, and also we value the students' need education. So we move the students to Arua so that they can get the training in Arua.
60 students have enrolled in clinical medicine, medical lab technology, diploma in midwifery and nursing at the institute now located in Uganda. At least 30 first-year students who have no money to travel to Uganda registered in Kajokeji because they can't afford to pay for tuition in the neighboring Uganda with Ugandan shillings or U.S. dollars. Louis says he prefers that part of the school for first-year students remain in South Sudan so that students can pay their tuition fees in pounds. He is asking parents and well-wishers to help the students continue with their education. Louis says the school plans to eventually relocate all of its students to Uganda if they can raise the tuition fees of $1,000 per year.
For those who cannot afford, we are here to rebuild the nation. And to rebuild the nation, we have to give them equal chances. That is why we have given them an opportunity to continue paying in South Sudanese pounds in South Sudan. But because of the security situation, and if the person feels he can move to Uganda, we welcome. We highly recommend that for security purposes.
Second-year student Anaga Augustine is from the Nuba Mountains in Sudan, which has also seen its share of violence. Augustine is studying to become a clinical officer and has resumed her studies in Uganda's Arua district this week. She says she feels safe in Uganda after witnessing an attack on her school in South Sudan last year.
I actually feel great because the incident got me there and I felt bad. I didn't imagine that the school would be there again. So I was happy when our director told us he has made an effort, the school will be in Arua, which is in a safe place, and I feel that I'm happy and I appreciate him for his effort.
24-year-old Okot Joseph is a student of clinical medicine and public health. Joseph says the school administration made the right decision to allow the students to continue their education in Uganda. He wants South Sudan's leaders to restore peace in the country so that he and other students can return and continue with their education without fear of being attacked.
Fighting is not a solution to everything. Displacing people even from that school, any institution, it is not the right way to develop our country. So they have to take note that Education is one of the best way in order for us to live in peace and harmony in the country.
Sporadic fighting has been reported in parts of Yei River State in recent months, displacing thousands of residents who fled to neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Last month, unidentified gunmen abducted senior government official Julius Tablé in Yei River State. His whereabouts remain unknown. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Arua, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the results of recent examination indicate South Sudanese girls are smarter than boys. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the most important value to teach to children?
One of the most important values to teach to children is discipline, because everything you do in life revolves around it.
Is to make them believe in themselves. If you believe in yourself, you believe that you can do anything. You can do everything you want. You can be whoever you want to be in the future because you think you can do it.
I think the most important one is respect, because I know and believe that respect can help the children in future as they are growing up.
We raise up a child in a good way whereby he can respect the elder and respect even the age mate.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A horrific videotaped gang rape of a girl in Puntland, Somalia, could serve as a powerful test case for the newly sexual violence statute and potentially the rule of law in that country. Jason Patinkin has more for VOA from Nairobi.
A group of men arrested and accused of gang raping and stabbing a pair of young girls in Somalia's Puntland state in December could face the death penalty or life imprisonment if they are found guilty. That is, if the state takes the case.
This case is the first case that recalls for enforcement of the Sexual Offense Act. This is a test for Puntland government's accountability in front of the international law, in front of the national laws, and also in front of their people.
Lawyer Salim Saeed drafted the new law, which Puntland enacted in December. It is the first law in all of Somalia to criminalize sexual assault. The new act draws on modern Western jurisprudence and is compliant with Islamic Sharia law. In Puntland, the alleged perpetrators recorded the assault of one of the girls and posted it online, sparking national and international outrage. Somalia's Minister of Gender, Sara Samantar.
Impunity is one of our biggest issues in Somalia. A lot of similar rape happens in Somalia, but it's not publicly spoken. But the fact that now they posted on the social media, that gives at least the whole world to see indeed what happens in Somalia.
Most rapes go unreported and unpunished in Somalia, but there is hope this case will usher in change. Saeed says the new law in Puntland allows prosecutors to bring multiple charges against the suspects for gang rape of an underage girl, and for posting a video of the assault online. The charges could lead to up to 30 years in prison. But since the suspects allegedly used a weapon during the assault, the case could fall under a section of Sharia law known as hiraba, with even harsher consequences.
Whenever they use weapon and means, this crime qualifies to hiraba, which is, according to the sexual offense bill, qualified to either death penalty or life imprisonment.
But there is no guarantee the law will prevail, because Somalia's government, even at the state level, has little real control after decades of war. Saeed says in most parts of Somalia, local clan elders dispense informal justice through what is known as customary law. In customary law, rapists often only pay a fine as punishment, or the victims are forced to marry their attackers.
Since the collapse of the former central government in 1991, customary law is one which prevails. The power is in the hands of the elders. They are taking advantage of the weakness of the rule of law and also the weakness of the government. If the Puntland government want to show they are accountable, I think they will not hesitate to take action and to take over this case.
A bill similar to the Puntland Sexual Offences Act has been in the federal parliament for over a year, according to Antonia Mulvey, CEO of Legal Action Worldwide, which works with Somalia's legal system on sexual assault.
We want to now use this as an opportunity to present the sexual offences bill and have the public pressure upon them to pass it in its current form. And so I hope this will galvanize religious leaders and the parliament to move it forward.
With so much on the line, rights advocates will be closely watching to see if the accused in this case in Puntland wind up in a state courtroom. Jason Patinkin for VOA News in Nairobi.
Education officials in Tonj State say girls performed better than boys in recent primary school leaving certificate examinations. State officials attribute the girls' successful performance to national government efforts to support girls' child education. Santino Manut Ayuel has more for VOA from Tonj.
Joseph Charong Marial, Secretary of the Primary and Secondary Schools Examination Board in Tonj State, says girls outperformed boys in last year's examination mostly because society in Tonj is aware of the importance of girls' education and supports it.
During the time the school were opened last year, there was what we call public awareness as on girls. Especially the parents of the girls were informed in advance before the academic year opened in 2016, where they were told to let their girls to be free out of anything. They were fully informed about that the girls are supposed to be sent to schools and then they are supposed to learn. So in this case, girls were free from household work.
William Majonga Code is the head teacher of Tony Academy, where two girls excel in their examination.
The reason behind their success, according to my view, is that it is through the commitment of the teachers and the pupils themselves, plus the cafetation grants, which was actually brought to school.
16-year-old Monica Yot Mwindi took her examination at Tony Academy. Yot says the girls worked hard to outperform the boys. She says most boys in her class claim to be smarter than girls, but this time the girls proved the boys wrong.
The reason of being in top 10 because all the boys, they do used to say that we are the cleverest than girls, and that's why we try our level best also to compete with them.
22-year-old Jacqueline Nyagir Ball had the fourth highest scores in the examinations. She attributed her success to support from mother along with her teachers.
My mom was giving me time to study at home. I was not doing any work at home during the exam. She gave me much time to study first during the exam. And also my teachers in the school, they were encouraging me that you study well even though things are difficult. You just continue with your studies. And me also, I attend the classes every day.
Ablo Mayen is Jacqueline Nyigi's mother. As widow and a farmer, she says she is determined to have her daughter receive an education. Mayen used the proceeds from her harvest to pay for her daughter's school fees. Speaking in Dinka, Nyigi says parents should not stop their daughters from going to school.
Don't say if a girl is sent to school, then she is going to get spoiled. Give a girl a chance to be responsible and send her to school. If she messes up with her future, she wouldn't blame her mother for not sending her to school in future.
According to state's education officials, only 185 out of more than 1,100 pupils who sat for primary school leaving certificate examination in Tonj State were girls. They say while all the girls passed, quite a few boys fell. For VOA News, I am Santino Manut in Tonj.
Christian preachers in Africa have been converging on Gabon, hoping to capitalize on the excitement surrounding the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations tournament and send out a message for peace. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Libreville.
100 singers from 7 Pentecostal churches lead people to dance at Boulevard Triomphal in Libreville. This has become a regular event on the evenings of the Group A matches that are happening nearby. Pastor Imohi Peter is from Nigeria, one of the several clerics from revivalist churches around the region who have come to Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament.
We are living in a world of chaos, a world of confusion that needs Jesus. So what we do as a church is to pray. I say, Lord, bring peace to these various areas where there is no peace.
He preaches by the giant screens installed near the Boulevard Triomphal. After the matches, Peter and his church members counsel new converts and direct them to sister churches in the countries where they will return when the tournament ends. Cameroonian evangelist preacher Mbella David says he is seeing about 5 new converts a day.
We allow God to raise us to praise Him. Then praise God where it don't show praise the Lord.
Mbella David is preaching on a bus transporting football fans to the stadium in Libreville. Passengers listen and some even ask questions, but not everyone approves.
Prêcher, c'est bien, mais il faut savoir où le faire et quand le faire. Prêcher par-ci, par-là, c'est le désordre.
Omar Bongo University of Libreville student Lidwin Kemke says preaching is a very good thing, but people should know when and where to do it. She says shouting and praying in buses creates total disorder. The Christian preachers are part of an effort called the AFCON Peace Campaign, an effort for religious tolerance and an end to conflict. Kenyan-born Reverend Kamu Stanislaus is the main organizer.
It's very difficult to measure peace. Sometimes you work very hard and there are peace here and peace over there. But then when violence erupts, people remember the violence and forget the time of peace. To work for peace is more difficult than to stimulate violence.
The sidelines of an international football tournament may seem to be an unlikely place for religion. But the pastors gathered here say AFCON is a crossroads. The event draws fans from around the continent, so what better place to get the word out? Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Libreville.
That report by Kinzeka brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Celebrate by Isaka Number One.
Isaka Number One, Bidugu Bonate Independent, celebrate South Sudan Independence Day.
Celebrate,
celebrate,
my Bidugu Sudan, celebrate,
Masau Sudan. Arfa alam kadina fo, nefil alam ta Sudan gedim, arfa alam ta Sudan gedi, arfa alam ta junub Sudan, celebre.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Celebrate. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad to have your company. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.